Good afternoon, and welcome to an afternoon of entertainment, enlightenment, and some good cheer. So great to see a big crowd here today. I'm Mark Bartlett, the head librarian at the Society Library, and I will say it's a real pleasure to welcome you back into the building for our first event during and partly after our renovation. This weekend, we actually just put down the scaffolding. For those of you who are regulars in the building, the scaffolding is gone and the stairwell. And if you look up on your way out today, you'll notice the beautifully restored skylight that was the original part of the Rogers House building. And with the generous support of the Peluso family, we were able to do that as part of this summer's renovation. And it's quite a beautiful feature of the library that we're happy to have back. So thank you to the Pelusos for that. Before I introduce our presenters for this afternoon, I did just want to ask any of you who might happen to have a cell phone in your pocket, if you could take it out and turn it off. I think everyone up here will be really happy, as well as your neighbors, if it's in the off position. I did a very good thing of leaving mine upstairs in my office. So the library does rely on the support of our donors and members, and thank you all for your support this year. This is, again, our time of our annual appeal, so we contribute generously this year. It really helps to underwrite a lot of what we do here in the library, including doing events like this afternoon's very special Gershwin afternoon. I'm really happy to welcome back our good friend Michael Lasser, who, as you can read from the program, is a very accomplished gentleman, and I will lead the program to tell you of his many wonderful accomplishments. We're also joined by Shad and Sarah and Brenna, who will perform giving us some great Gershwin music, and Michael will be telling us about the Gershwin as well. So welcome and enjoy the afternoon.
Gershwin song, to my particular delight, means I write. My particular interest is lyrics, and so this is me and nothing else. The song you just heard, Beginner's Line, is a miniature lesson in lyric writing. The first time that I'm in love with you. Da-dum-dum, da-dum, da-dum-dum, da-dum-dum-dum. How do you put words to that? Forget what you know. Da-dum-dum, da-dum, da-dum-dum, da-dum-dum-dum. Go ahead, put words to it. It's very hard because it doesn't sound like the rhythms of talk. It sounds like notes cavorting. It sounds like notes about to go in any direction they choose. They're not, they're George puts them. But there's a sense of bounce and play and unpredictability and jazz in those notes. And yet Iris says, the first time that I'm in love with you, and it sounds as if those words were simply waiting around for some notes to get written so he could put them through. Let me tell you how he does it. He uses monosyllables, the first time that I'm in love with you. So he doesn't have to stretch words over those unpredictable sounds. He also does it by using the short I vowel, it, and the long I. They're very short, tight sounds. The I sound of all the vowels is the shortest, tightest sound. Ah, A, O, E, it, it. Even I isn't ah. It's closed and tight and feels short. And then he lets repetition and internal rhyme carry the line through. You all know what internal rhyme is? When, you know, in poetry you rhyme at the end, in songs you rhyme at the end. When you rhyme in the middle, the highfalutin term for that, if you're for an English professor, is internal rhyme. And Ira uses it. Listen, the first, the IR isn't I sound. Time that I'm in love with you. Songs are very short. You know that. They're miniatures. And so repetition is using up space, time. It's got to count. I'm in love is what he's saying in the middle of that line. I'm in love. Except, if you keep going, he's going to change everything at the end. He's going to change the vowel to change the perspective. The first time that I'm in love with you. And everything changes. It's all about me until I get to you. It's all about I until I get to ooh. You know what that's called? There's a word for that. Mastery. As a very young man, Ira discovered light verse at a time when American light verse was flowering. The newspapers were filled with it. FPA. We'll know about FPA, Franklin P. Adams. I'm not going to tell you Google. Light verse is dead. Alas. Alas. For those who don't know, it admires form and craft. It deals in a lighthearted, sometimes humorous way with familiar subjects. Breaking a favorite teacup could be the source of an elegy, a mock elegy. Writing about the pigtails of the girl who sat in front of you in school, those kinds of subjects. Familiar, everyday subjects, give it a twist. And the poems are filled with puns and unlikely rhymes and alliterate all the tricks of the poet's trade, and yet accessible, friendly, fun, light verse. Go read Phyllis McGinley. Any of you remember Phyllis McGinley? I hope she's in the library. Go rediscover. Some of the references will be dated because she was writing 40 years ago, but go read Phyllis McGinley. What I just described for you is like verse. It could also serve as a definition of a good song lyric. Song lyrics are not about obscure, esoteric things. They're about ordinary things like heartbreak and love and sitting on top of the world, having the world your plaything, or the worst thing that ever happened to you, in terms we all know. Songs don't tell us we're stupid. Songs tell us that what you and I feel day by day is something terrific. And then they find a way to say it that's never been said before. Ira never got the material of light verse out of his system, no matter what he was writing about. He never got that approach to songwriting out of his system, even when he was making fun of it.
I love to ride. to chime. Citrus fruit loves to lime, but I love to rhyme. Such pure delight. Bite, sight, bite, quite right. Castle, tassel, muscle, tussle, yustle, I love to rhyme. Algerian, Siberian, Shakespearean, tell me how can you resist? Amnesia, Rhodesia, Zambesia, cannot lightly be dismissed. I love to rhyme, but here we are wasting time. The day is overdue when I rhyme with you.
I love to rhyme, steeple bells love to chime, handicappers love to time, but I love to rhyme. Such pure delight. Fight, slight, fight, quite right. Muscle, tussle, tassel, castle, wrestle.
My cranium.
Geranium.
Harmonious.
Erroneous.
Indispensable.
Insensible.
Splendiferous.
Pestiferous.
Orange.
Tangerine.
I love to rhyme, and wouldn't it be sublime if one day it could be that you rhyme with me.
Ira obviously loved to play with language, but the goal was not play. The goal was not simply to be wit. The goal was to use the verbal pyrotechnics to shape the emotion within a lyric. The goal was to combine wit with sentiment. That's hard. They don't go together. Sentiment requires that you be up close, that you be involved. It requires emotion. Wit requires judgment. It requires distance. And here, Ira, and all the best songwriters at their best, writing lyrics that combine wit with sentiment. Lorenz Hart, I didn't know what, it never entered my mind. Someone ordering orange juice for one. And that's all you need to know. The wit and the heartbreak in five words. Wit plus sentiment. And that's one of the things Ira was so good at. They use wordplay to create an emotional point of view. Here are two examples. In the first of them, Ira borrows everyday expressions from the 1920s. It's flapper slang. Flapper slang involved abbreviating words. And so rather than saying something was delicious, they would say it was delish. And so this song is written in the 20s, and Ira is using the flapper slang of the day, taking everyday expressions, abbreviating them, and then adding his own very clever rhyming to express an emotional point of view. What would have been trite in lesser hands now sparkles.
Life has just begun. Jack has found his gym. Don't know what you've done, but I'm all a thrill. How can words express your divine appeal? You can never guess all the love I feel. From now on, lady, I insist. For me, no other girls exist. Marvelous, you should care for me. Sappho nights, spare a dice, what I love to see. You made my life so glamorous. Wonderful, I tell you, in my humble fashion, that you thrill me through with a tender passion. When you said you care, imagine my emotion. I swore then and there, permanent devotion. You made all other girls seem blah. Just you alone filled me with us. Wonderful, marvelous, you should care for me. Soft nights, spare a dice, what I love to see. My dear, it's only clover time. Is growing flat for you like this and the other, while I go for this and that. Goodness knows what the end will be. Oh, I don't know where I'm at. It looks as if we two will never be one. Something must be done. You say either, and I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. You like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh, pajamas, I like pajamas, I'll wear pajamas, give up pajamas, or we know we need each other, so we better call the calling off. Let's call the whole thing off.
You say laughter, and I say laughter. You say after, and I say often. Laughter, laughter, after, laughter. Let's call the whole thing off. You like vanilla, and I like vanilla. You sarsaparilla, and I sarsaparilla.
Singers who insisted on beginning the song, "It's Wonderful," drove him crazy. If he wanted it to be "It's Wonderful," he'd have written "It's Wonderful." Those two songs make great use of cliches. Now, you've been taught, as have I, that good writing never uses cliches. That's true 90% of the time. The other 10% is in popular songs. Ira even wrote about the value of cliche. First of all, there's the idea of brevity. You've got 32 bars. A typical song lyric is 65 or 75 or 80 words. That's it. And so you have to register quickly. The nice thing about a cliche is that everybody understands it immediately, and it's very economical. On the other hand, and it was originally very vivid speech, which is how it got to be a cliche. But it is a cliche, and it's tired to the point of death. So what do you do? I hated the cliches in second-rate songs. Because what second-rate and third-rate and fourth-rate songwriters do is simply take the cliche and plop it down in the hope that it will do the emotional work for them. And of course it doesn't, because it's simply something tired to the point of death. It's just a cliche. What the good songwriters do is reinvent the cliche. You know Irving Berlin's song Cheek to Cheek? I always feel a need to mention Irving Berlin when I come here because he was a member of the library. Irving Berlin in Cheek to Cheek talks about, I love to go out fishing and I love to... That's a reinvention in contemporary terms of I climb the highest mountain and I swim the deepest river. It's a reimagining and reapplication of the cliché. Except now it suddenly has... Well, mock irony. I mean, who thinks of Fred Astaire going out fishing? But that's another matter. So he thought about cliches, and he worked to rework them. In fact, he was admired by his fellow songwriters for how hard he worked to revise and perfect his lyrics. His fellow songwriters called him the jeweler. Now, when he was working with cliches and trying to find new ways to use them, he did understand that he had to work within those very tight conventions and yet make the song he was writing distinctive. In just a minute, you're going to hear some solutions to his problem. The first song you're going to hear, rather the second song you're going to hear, starts with a catchphrase. You know what a catchphrase is? Anyone doesn't know the term catchphrase? Splendid. They're very useful for songs. This one starts with one, and then it uses some good-natured cliches to get us through the verse, and then it initiates a history lesson. So the first cliche really is that catchphrase. And this is all in the service of love, as it's required to be, pretty much. But first, a song that does its work even more simply, that takes the title that conjures up a phrase we all know, and then turns expectations on their ear.
Into a jam love speeds to, it may be nature's course.
But we mustn't be like the other sheep. Better far if we look before we leave.
Perhaps it's better after all if we don't answer nature's call.
Who knows if we'd agree, you like you and I like me. I don't think I'll fall in love today. When evening shadows creep,
I like dancing,
I like sleep. I don't think I'll fall in love today.
But it would be fun to bring your carpet slippers. When the dinner bell would ring, I'd serve a can of kippers.
Don't you know how to cook?
I could look in a book.
I don't think I'll fall in love today. Love is a fever chronic. Avoid it. Why take the chance?
Safer to be platonic. Why burn up with romance?
Adam without Eve, happiness had known. So suppose we leave well enough alone.
Imagine signing up.
windows shut.
Windows shut.
Charming. But I don't think I'll fall in love today.
Did you pick that cravat?
I did that.
Here's your hat. I don't think I'll fall in love today. It's as clear as ABC.
Something you know, and you try to listen to it as if you don't. It's a perfect example of working with cliches, of turning all those romantic assumptions, all those romantic expectations, and all the ways we have of saying them, and turning them on their ear, and thus making them new. It's a wonderful lyric. And a perfect example. I wasn't smart enough when I wrote this. I got smarter listening to Ira. It's a perfect example of what I was saying. Okay, I'm going to shut up. A beautiful mountain or a pretty lake, but great historical forces, great natural patterns. And he did that in a number of songs, and that's one example. Somehow this love is as big as Columbus discovering America and the Wright brothers and the Ford and the Tin Lizzie and whatever. He loved that kind of play, and it recurs in his songs. Now, the thing that has to come through in a lot of songs is an out-and-out lie. Love, not only will love last forever, there's lie one. Well, it may and it may not. But we posit it, don't we? We simply put it down there in concrete. The other is that it will never change. You've been married long enough to know that ain't true. It will change, and it may end. But there's the song affirms this permanence. And yet, the songs that say that keep changing. Because we would say it one way in the 20s, and another way in the 30s, and another way in the 40s. I don't know who's singing Who Cares? Okay. Who Cares is a song of mock defiance. It's feisty. Who cares? Listen, who cares? You think such and such? Who cares? Go away. Who cares? It's tip of that kind of feistiness, that kind of combativeness, that kind of contrariness is typical of songs from the 1930s. That shouldn't surprise you. You're not going to hear that kind of song during World War II. You're going to hear I'll Walk Alone. So this is a depression point of view. In the face of economic disaster, the song affirms what only love can sustain. The sky may fall, there's the cliche being reworked in the lyric. The banks may fail, nice parallel, but we still celebrate because we're in love. So notice, there's a larger idea, the sky may fall, there's a contemporaneous reference, and the contrast between them is clever, apt, and funny. Doing so, celebrating in these difficult times, is what's going to deepen our love, whether it lasts forever, certainly for as long as it lasts. Who cares?
Let it rain and thunder, let a million firms go under. I am not concerned with stocks and bonds that I've been burned with. I love you and you love me, and that's how it will always be, and nothing else can ever mean a thing. Who cares what the public chatters? Love's the only thing that matters. Who cares if the sky cares to fall in the sea? Who cares how history rates me? Long as your kiss intoxicates me, why should I care? Life is one long jubilee. As long as I care for you, and you care for me. Who cares how history rates me? Long as your kiss intoxicates me, why should I care? Life is one long jubilee. As long as I care for you, and you care for me.
Ira writes, who cares if banks fail in Yonkers, long as you've got a kiss that conquers. Good? God, that's a great lyric. I wish he was here so we could clap for him. What a great lyric that is. Do you know that in songwriting, when you have collaboration, and in popular music before the 60s, almost all the songs were collaborations. Porter wrote alone, Berlin wrote alone, few others, but that was, Herman Hupfeld wrote alone.
Frank Lesser.
Frank Lesser, of course. Do you know, don't you know what Herman Hupfeld wrote? Well, he did write When Yuba Played the Rumba on His Tuba. But he also wrote As Time Goes By. I just got it. But there were very few. It was a collaborative form. Somebody wrote the music and somebody wrote the words. Most of the time, the music came first and you set the words to the music. And some people have puzzled about that because somehow it seems backwards. Because music is so abstract, so malleable, that it should be easier to make it fit to words without it feeling forced, mechanical. But it doesn't work that way. Somehow the music is there, and of course language has its own music. Music doesn't have its own words. Words have their own music. And that gives it a kind of resilience that lets it somehow land the music. Lyricists talk about words having to land on the music. You have to put the right word to the right note. You can't put the on a crescendo, to give you too simple an example. And so the here are George and Ira working together, but unlike most collaborators, because they were not only brothers, they were extraordinarily close. It was almost more like a marriage than it was two brothers, a good marriage. And they would sit together at the piano, working together. There's a wonderful book about their collaboration called Fascinating Rhythm by Dina Rosenberg, who is the wife of of E.Y. Harburg's son. E.Y. Harburg? The only people in the world who know who E.Y. Harburg is live in New York City. Because you go out there, you say Johnny Mercer and they nod, and you say Lorenz Hart and they nod, you say Oscar Hammerstein, they do backflips. You say Tim Rice, they come and kiss you. Not because of them, because of the name Tim Rice. But you say E.Y. Harburg, and they look like a bunch of seventh graders. And then you say Over the Rainbow, and they say Harold Arlen. They don't know. It's very strange. The most famous American song, the quintessential American song, and they only know who wrote the melody. Anyway, that's an aside you get for free. They would sit together, and rather than typically, out in Hollywood even, the composer would write, and the melody would be delivered by messenger to the lyricist, who would write the words and send it back. Very odd. But it was, they did their work together for the part. And George and Ira were different. They would sit together, and George would play scraps of melody for Ira to hear. And Ira would finally say, oh, that's one I think I can work with, and George would play it again. So he could get it in his ear. And that was important. Lyricists need to get that's why they used to write what they call dummy lyrics. If they were with the composer or they had a recording with them, they would very quickly scratch down words that fit those rhythms. Not because they were any good. We could be the pineapple ate the banana. I mean, it doesn't matter. It just needed to be the rhythm. So that when they were by themselves working, they would have it. The most famous dummy lyric that never got changed, because everybody decided it was too good to mess with, is T for Two. Humans and Caesar were on their way to a party at Gertrude Lawrence's. And Humans insisted that Caesar hear the song. Caesar didn't want to. I'll hear it tomorrow. No, I'm going to play it for you. And when he heard it, he quickly scribbled something down. And that's, it had nothing to do with tea. And that's why the word tea for two was only in the first two lines. It's never repeated again in the song. It was a dummy lyric that wasn't supposed to last. So never throw anything away. At least my wife would. I'm the thrower out of the house. And so what would happen here is that he would get this scrap of melody, and then while George was developing it, while Ira was sitting next to him, making words, not a dummy lyric, the real thing, and he would say, George, I got a really good idea, but I need another note in the third measure. And so George would play to figure out another note, and he'd put it in. And he might say, and Ira would say, no, wrong place in the measure, because the accent on the word needs to be here. And George might say, George, Ira, what about this word? And they would go back and forth with each other. And the line between composer and lyricist, to a small degree, would blur. And that's rare, maybe unheard of. And so while Ira knew what his job was and George knew what his job was, they were somehow feeding, guiding one another. And they would adjust. Ira also had to adjust because George's style changed. In the 20s, George's writing was very percussive, very staccato. And as he got older, into the 30s, his melodic line lengthened and became more melodic, more lyrical. And Ira had to adjust to writing a different kind of lyric that fit this different sound. And so I thought you might like to hear an earlier song played off against a later song to hear that change. By the way, Ira said that the lyric of the first song was the hardest one he ever had to write. It drove him crazy until he realized that it was a song about itself. And so it was not in no way a love song. The name of the song is Fascinating Rhythm. And the song is so intensely, it's so driven in its rhythm that he solved the problem by writing a song about rhythm itself. And rhythm itself, the word rhythm, has that funny rhythm. But he could use it. And so here are Fascinating Rhythm from the early George and Ira, and then Embraceable You from the later George and Ira.
Consistent, the day isn't distant when it'll drive me insane. Comes in the morning without any warning and hangs around all day. I'll have to sneak up to it someday and speak up to it. I hope it listens when I say. Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, I'm all a quiver. What a mess you're making, the neighbors want to know why I'm always shaking, just like a flipper. Each morning I get up with the sun, start the hopping, never stopping, to find at night no work has been done. I know that once it didn't matter, but now you do it wrong when you start to patter, I'm so unhappy. Won't you take a day off, decide to run them on, somewhere far away off, and make it snappy. Oh, how I long to be the man I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, oh, won't you stop picking on me? Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, I'm all a quiver. What a mess you're making, the neighbors want to know why I'm always shaking, just like a flipper. Each morning I get up with the sun, stop hopping, never stopping, to find at night no work has been done. I know that once it didn't matter, but now you're doing wrong when you start to patter. I'm so unhappy. Won't you take a day off, decide to run along, won't you sort of lay out and make me happy? Oh, how I long to be the man I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, well, won't you stop picking on me?
Writing the jazz inflected melodies of George. Writing with Kern was another matter. Kern's background was German operetta, and he learned to write American. That's an oversimplified, distorted way of putting it, but it makes the point. Certainly the melodies that Kern wrote were deeply romantic. And Ira, when he wrote this song, thought that it was a dreadful flop. He thought the lyric was awful. He refused to turn it in. He wrote and rewrote. He threw it away and started over. He wrote many lyrics to the song. He thought they were awful, every one of them. The producer of the movie it was for finally said, "We need it by tomorrow." And so he turned in the latest thing, thought it was a disaster, and learned soon after that that he was wrong. Even the people who do it sometimes are wrong. And so here are two songs by Ira with other writers, which are anything but flops. song begins, "The more I read the papers, the less I comprehend." That's not an adolescent speaking. That's a grown up. "The world and all its capers and how it all must end." Capers is a word that adults use. It's an ironic word. It's got a lovely, deft, ironic touch about the confusions of the world that's just right. "In time, the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, their only native clay, but our love is here to stay." Remember what I said before about the way in which these songwriters were able to combine wit and sentiment to create an emotional point of view that was convincing. The irony in this iconic song is that at first we didn't know how good it was. George died in the middle of its writing. It's the last song that he and Ira worked on together. For those few who haven't been paying attention, that's "Love Is Here to Stay." Ira finished it by himself with a little help from Vernon Duke. One of the things we've learned over the years, and recent years, is that Duke helped much less than had been previously thought, but he did help a little, mainly on the verse. It was written for a movie called The Goldwyn Follies, 1938, starring the estimable Kenny Baker, who has ended up being unknown, as he so richly deserved. He was one of what was known as the fruity tenors. He was one, Dick Powell was one. Their voices sounded like overripe fruit. The movie was a dreadful movie and very quickly disappeared. And with it, the song. You know, often when shows or movies, musicals, are flops, they take very good songs down with them. It was another 15 years later before the song resurfaced, sung by Gene Kelly in... American in Paris, thank you. And from that point on, we knew what we had. George and Ira's last song together, "Love Is Here to Stay."
"The more I read the papers, the less I comprehend the world and all its capers, and how it all will end. Nothing seems to be lasting, but that isn't our affair. We've got something permanent, I mean in the way we care. It's very clear, our love is here to stay. Not for a year, but ever and a day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies, and in time may go. But oh my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we going a long, long way. In time, the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay." And in time may go, but oh my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay, but our love is here
Thank you all for coming. Our performers this afternoon, once again, Michael Lasser. John Olson. Very own, Dr. Daniel Brunsay.
We're going to do an encore. Yeah. I have to catch a plane. I chose this as an encore because it's so unlike what you've been hearing, a different kind of a song. It's from 1925, long forgotten. I hope there have been some songs you hadn't heard before. I mean, if it's all Embraceable You, that's terrific, but you don't need to come here to hear Embraceable You again. I hope there were some songs you hadn't heard before. I'm hoping this is another one. It's from 1925, it's sweet, and innocent, and funny, and sexy, and it's got a wonderful line about a pillow in it. I want to sit there. It's not a torchy lament by any means, but it's very much a song for after midnight, from a time when you said goodnight, you left rather than rolling over. That was good. Even though it's still daytime, it's a grown-up lullaby called Nighty Night. Anyone know Nighty Night?
No.
Don't like it. I hope you enjoy it. It's here to thank you for coming.
It's time for little boys like you to be in bed. The dawn is just ahead, you know.
I thought I'd hang around till night is at an end, just watching out for friend or foe.
That's awfully sweet, but then if trouble comes at all, you bet you'll hear me calling you.
If I should leave you now, I'll only toss and roll, and keep awake the whole night through.
If you try to count a thousand sheep, I am certain you will fall asleep.
Nighty-night, little girl, good night. Sheep I'll count.
That's quite a great amount.
With my sleep, though I'll keep on pining. Every night I'll be weeping like a willow. All the night I'll be envying your pillow. Night air is very bad for one, you have it straight, but lady, it is great for two.
No, I'm afraid that I'll be acting like a loon, for there's a gorgeous moon above.
But I'll be glad to show you Jupiter and Mars, and lots of little stars you'll love.
All that I can do for you, it seems, is to wish you lots of pleasant dreams.
Nighty night, little girl, good. I'll keep on pining.
Little boy, all my dreams you'll be adorning. But oh, I'll thrill to hear you say good morning.
Nighty night, till the sun is shining.